Timmies and Spikes, we must all arrive at the win condition.
Just dream hard, like the real dream hard, and spell swindle a Galta with an Aether Heart out.
I mean, this is straight up like Quan Chi's fatality from Mortal Kombat 4.
And then you're like Burnishing Shoal Emrakul, take 16 infects.
Play as for Tolden Legacy. We'll see how that goes. Hello again and welcome back to the Win Condition Podcast, your source for lore, news, and brews in the Magic the Gathering community. My name is Sean, I'm your host. I'm joined by my co-host Greg. How's it going, Greg?
Doing okay today.
Fan-flippin-tastic. Hey, so we did get some fog this last week here in fabulous Fresno, just for your information.
What?
Yeah, it was.
How do you get fog?
It was pretty bad. Have you ever heard of a foggy day schedule before?
No.
Okay, so they have this thing here in Fresno where a foggy day schedule constitutes like buses not operating for a delayed period of time, and they have plan A through C. And it was so foggy that they went all the way to plan C, which means school doesn't start until about 11:30 in the morning. So I had to take my daughter to school at 11:30, and she was in each class for about 20 minutes apiece, and then it was even an early release day, like, you know, what's even the point of going to school in these days? But, you know, it was just super foggy.
That's weird.
Yeah,
right? We don't have things like that out here.
I know, right? I'm like, where was my foggy day schedule? I always wanted to have snow. You know, so you could get, like, snow days. You wouldn't have to go to school.
Man,
but
you know, my cousin, they moved out to Texas, and they had a snow day in December. And I'm like, what? How do you have a snow day in Texas? But as we now know, it actually snows there and pretty heavy sometimes. So
yeah, right? Jeez. Speaking of heavy, you can get some heavy, heavy deals if you go to Flipside Gaming at flipsidegaming.com, where if you make an order of $10 or more on any kind of Magic product or any other gaming product for that matter, whether it's singles or sealed product, use that promo code WINCONDITION in all caps and save yourself 10% off your purchase, which will help contribute to future show giveaways. What episode is this, Greg? Is this 44?
It's definitely pretty close to that.
Yeah, 43 or 44. Anyway, we just want to remind you guys that we will be having a giveaway on episode 50. So stay tuned, and we will be releasing details on how you can enter that sweet, sweet giveaway. All right, well, Greg, what kind of Magic have you played this week, if any? I've been a little shorthanded in the Magic department, but what have you played?
Well, I mean, you're just busy, so it's hard for you to play.
Yeah, that's true.
Let's see. I mean, we played last weekend.
We did. We played some EDH, some Commander.
And you kicked my butt, if I remember correctly.
Your memory serves correct, yes. And we will be uploading footage of this with our commentary. And it was pretty interesting. You brought your upgraded with Rivals of Ixalan Editions Gishath EDH deck. And I built an Admiral Beckett Brass block-constructed commander deck. Mm-hmm. And I tell you what, that thing was much more powerful than I gave it credit for. When I thought about it, I'm like, Pirates, Grixis, could be good, you know, might be okay.
Yeah.
But wow. You know, we'll get into it a little bit later, but, you know, it was surprisingly effective. Pirates apparently are pretty good. So.
Yeah, they do things. All right, so I remember what I played on Monday, because out here, Monday's our EDH night. That's when we normally play.
Okay.
I played Plane Chase EDH 4-player.
Oh, my gosh. Do tell. That sounds like so much fun. Oh, man.
It was actually a lot of fun. I played with a number of decks. I think I played with my wrist deck. I played with the dinos. I played with... Ur Drago and something else. I can't remember the other one. But it just came down to a lot of fun games. We were all playing fun stuff, just doing crazy things. Nothing that, like too broken.
That Ur Drago is that Spells Matters deck, right?
Well, it spells and artifacts because it also does a lot of like energy stuff too. I've gotten a couple times where I get like Dynavolt Tower out with a Tezzeret the Schemer and a Gonti's Aether Heart, and then I'm like, Aether works, Marvel?
Gonti's Aether Heart is definitely one of those fly-under-the-radar cards that generates so much mana. Because, I mean, look at it if it were
energy.
Actually...
Energy.
Yeah. I'm sorry. But look at it if you were to actually run that in Standard nowadays with all this treasure. I mean, you could probably get yourself...
Whoa. One moment. Are you thinking about spell swindling with an Aether Heart out?
If you spell swindled with an Aether Heart... Oh, my... Okay, Craig, I think...
Just dream hard, like the real dream hard, is you spell swindle a Galta with an Aether Heart out? Hey, I'll take... what is that? 24 energy and 12 treasures?
No, stop it. That's so bad. Oh, my God. Okay, you know what?
I have to get a spell swindle for this deck.
I think you need to build this Standard deck so we can create some Standard content that we can broadcast. That would be absolutely hilarious.
I'm going to have to build dinos, man. I think they're just so much better.
All right, fine. I'll build it then. Whatever.
And there's some Polyraptor combo out there, too.
Okay. I'd absolutely believe... I mean, Path of Metal with a Polyraptor seems pretty good.
It just does stuff.
It really does.
I like doing things. Okay. Anyhow.
And yeah, we have a lot of fun.
Plane Chase is always a lot of fun. I don't get to play it too often because of the fact that there's just a group of people here that don't understand the dynamics of it.
Uh-huh.
So it makes it for hard to play because sometimes if you've got a turn that takes more than 10 minutes, it's not an enjoyable game.
Yeah, and I find that Plane Chase definitely adds a lot of spice to a group that likes to play a lot, and maybe they've, you know, played their same decks a lot, or they're just looking for something new, but Plane Chase will definitely offer you that added, you know, kind of jolt that you might need to make your play group a little bit more interesting and exciting. So
it does. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Absolutely. All right. Well, let us go back because we are so deep into this Ixalan story. It's so good. We're gonna just go straight into Lore Corner.
Information and stories from the past.
Yes. Yes! Okay, so we actually...
How far back are we going?
We are going back, what is it, 1,500 years?
So, as we return back to our story, we are... We go back to what happened in the past between Azor and Ugin and Nicol Bolas with Sabotage. So, as you guys know, we've been speculating on what induced... amnesia is, and we were talking about it, and we find out here. So it was around 1,300 years ago. We're on a plane that we really don't know where it is. There's grass-eating beasts, a ripple in the air, a dragon tears through it. It was Ugin, and Azor was there with his new pursuit of justice. Everybody was bowing down. It was pretty awesome. So the Sphinx is 10,000 years old and addresses Azor and is like, Ugin, my friend, welcome to my newest home. And he's, of course, asking, what are you doing here? He wants to find out what's going on. And obviously it has to deal with Nicol Bolas, who is a common foe that makes all planes at risk. It's kind of not fun. So they talk about their plan and how they're going to get rid of Nicol Bolas. Now, of course, there's a bunch of people here. His hieromancy sent them away. But, you know, somebody was still there. Just like one or two peons. And they hatch their plan. He's going to go to Ixalan, where he's going to create the Immortal Sun and give it to the continent of Torazon. And, of course, in doing this, he's going to stop being a planeswalker, so he needs Ugin to help him get his spark back.
Right. Right.
And Azor is kind of like, hey, you need to get Nicol Bolas into a specific location and then call to me, and then I'll do that. And it's like, okay, I'll do that. I'll lure him to Tarkir.
It's like, I got you, boy.
Yeah. So.
So we have two of the most powerful minds in the multiverse kind of collaborating right now on how to get rid of one of the other most powerful minds in the multiverse.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Yeah. So where do we go next?
Next we go and we actually see Nicol Bolas. And he is interrogating a poor, poor elf about information on Azor and one of the planes that Azor has visited previously and instilled his, you know, lawful regime. So what it's an elf here. He says, tell me more of this lawbringer. And he's slapping an elf in the face with his own severed arm as he's trying to get information. I mean, this is straight up like Quan Chi's fatality from Mortal Kombat 4 here. This is absolutely hilarious. But anyway, he's like, you know, tell me about this, you know, lawbringer here. And the elf just absolutely divulges all the information that he can about him. I mean, there's statues constructed in Azor's likeness, you know, based on his gift, quote unquote, of this law system, you know, to this plane. And obviously, Nicol Bolas is like,
whoa, the gift of justice.
Okay, yes, the gift of justice. So, and after this elf's talking to him, you know, Bolas says to him, he goes, fear not, mortal. From all you've told me, I'm sure your lawbringer will return to aid you well before you bleed to death. I mean, this guy is so evil. And, you know, he's like, all right, I know now that, you know, Azor is, you know, going to be working against me and, you know, just finding all this information about, does he find out about Ugin from this elf, or is that elsewhere?
No.
Okay. Mm-mm. All right.
That's later on.
All right. Well then, all right. So then continue.
So as Nicol Bolas is running around the universe, toppling these systems of justice that Azor has put out there, he is trying to find out more and more information about the Lawbringer. And ultimately, he does figure out that he is a planeswalker. And then he gets to this plane where there are people that know about what's going on. And they also see that Azor doesn't return when Nicol Bolas is destroying their world. And what ends up happening is he finds somebody, just a person that was there, and brushes against their mind and realizes that they know something. And he forces them to talk. And they talk that he was worshiping Azor as a savior, but instead he broke a world that did not need fixing. And the day he spent hiding in the Palace of Justice, listening to him and the Spirit Dragon plot the end of the true evil, I thought I was as close as any mortal would ever be to the divine. Aww.
Oh.
A true evil, says Bolas. How flattering. And we go back to Azor, standing on the shores of Torazon in a maelstrom of his own magic, performing a feat of hieromancy that no being had ever attempted and none were ever be able to match.
Yep.
Severing his spark to create the artifact known as the Immortal Sun. He then speaks across worlds to Ugin, telling him that he is strong enough to take care of it. And Ugin is like, all right, I'll go to Tarkir. We'll pull him in. And then Nicol Bolas shows up before Ugin was ready.
Yep.
Tells him, your idiot cat is too fond of the statues of himself. I might not even have been listening to your charming long-distance talks if he hadn't left so many clues here and there.
So,
of course, Ugin's like, the Immortal Sun will seal you, planeswalker.
Yep.
And, yeah, no.
No. So Ugin and Bolas start fighting, and if you're fortunate enough to have seen the art for the card Crux of Fate, you could definitely see Ugin and Bolas, you know, deep in the heat of battle with each other. But of course, Ugin, on a world full of dragons, fighting Bolas, who has a mind control ability, takes control of all the dragons on Tarkir and tells them to attack Ugin. And of course, you know, hundreds of dragons against one is a little bit one-sided. So Ugin falls, but not dead. Thanks to the glory of time travel, you know, we see Sarkhan appear and cast a, you know, a bubble spell to heal Ugin over time. So so back on Ixalan, Azor is, you know, he's constructed the Immortal Sun. He has sacrificed his spark, and he is waiting. He is staring up into the sky for a year, just thinking to himself, all right, any day now, I'm going to hear from my boy. We're going to get this show on the road any day now. And he's just sitting there looking up, and he hears nothing. But he has
nothing at all.
He has no idea that Ugin is just basically asleep, recovering from his battle with Bolas. And so anyway, he basically said, all right, screw it. I have this immortal son. I gifted it to Torizon, and it has corrupted them. You know, now these vampires are thinking, oh, well, we got to kill everybody because we have the power. And he's like, nope, I'm going to take this over here to the Sun Empire, you know, and then the Sun Empire.
To Ixalan.
To Ixalan. There you go. And so then the Sun Empire possesses it, and they go, huh, well, we are super powerful now. You all must bow to us. And he's like, okay, well, these guys don't get it either. So he then takes it to Araska, whom the heralds, the river heralds, the merfolk know of, and hides it there, and they basically just sit there and protect it, as we saw earlier in the story with Tishana, Kumena, Kapala, but they've never used it up until this point. So anyway, then we rejoin who, Greg?
Then we return to Vraska. And Jace and Vraska, well, this is at the point where Jace is letting Vraska know everything about Nicol Bolas. The failed attempt to take the Planar Bridge, the army of Eternals and Amonkhet, and, of course, Vraska tells everything she knows about Bolas to Jace, the special spell to get into his meditation plane, the spell that she's going to cast to get the Planar Bridge back, or to get the Immortal Sun out of there, and the promises that he made to her.
Yep.
And in finding this out, Jace is like, "Oh, we can't let this. This is not no." Just know it's all bad.
Yeah, and then
honestly.
He's thinking to himself, trying to recall, you know, now that he has his memory back, and Vraska looks at him, and he's just sitting there going, oh my God. Like, he's just in shock, and Vraska's like, can I see? And Jace is like, sure. And, you know, he goes into one of his shared memory moments where Vraska sees, and lo and behold, you know, you see Nicol Bolas on Amonkhet and all the devastation he'd wrought and his army of Eternals. And he, you know, along with Jace remembering this, he shares this with Vraska. And then after they see all this craziness, they zap back to Ixalan. And no. They do go through the battle that Nicol Bolas had, or the encounter, more so, not really a battle, that Nicol Bolas had with Jace, and you know, Nicol Bolas's attempt to get within Jace's mind the spell that Ugin implanted in him to trigger sending him to Ixalan. And so now all has kind of come clear to both of them, and Vraska sitting there like, wait a minute, what does he want? He wants Ravnica, ultimately.
Yep.
And Vraska's like, oh my God, I am going to help this guy, this dragon, destroy the very plane that I want to, you know, be a guild leader of, and I helped him.
Yep.
And so she doesn't feel so hot right now.
She is not a happy camper.
No.
She is very upset at this. It is like, what are we going to do? If I go back to him and he knows that I've seen you, he's going to kill me, then kill you.
Yep.
if we give him the Immortal Sun, then he kills Ravnica, and we're stuck here.
Yep. Yep.
And we're not going to do anything, so we're going to die again, too.
Yeah, and Jace is like,
what are we going to do?
Jace is like, this has all been a farce. You know, Kaladesh, Amon
Why Ket, does anything we've done matter? Of course we're not helping anything.
Yeah, we've all just been, to coin a cliche, pawns in his master plan. So,
oh man, that is a bad joke. You know
yep,
it.
Yep. But Greg, guess what? We finally get to learn the source of the card, the reason for the card, the story card induced amnesia. Why don't you let us know what happens?
So what ends up happening is Vraska gets an idea in her head and is like, you know what? What if we give him the Immortal Sun, but he doesn't know that I know who you are? I mean, I know who you are, but none of this happened here. He doesn't know you've ever been to Ixalan.
Right.
And ultimately what will end up happening is I will be a pawn inside of his army until the time you give me my memories back. Take my memories, Jace. And Jace, of course, is like, no. Why would I ever take your memories? Those are yours. They're sacred.
Yeah,
and Vraska keeps talking about what she can do within the inner ranks, and ultimately Jace is like, this is the only way we're going to survive, huh? And she's like, yeah.
Right.
Well, you know what I'm going to do when I get those memories back? I'm going to take you to the 10th Street Market. And he's like, well, I know where the 10th Street Market is. And she's like, well, it's not like you've had a date there. And
yep.
Jace kind of is like, yeah, all right, I'll take you up on that. So he remembers some of his methods from Alhamaret. They go over and they look at all the memories. And one of the things he says, if there's a memory you don't want me to see, just tell me.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of revisit everything that happens on Ixalan between the two of them. And Jace shows her taking all those memories out, tying them up with a spell and tucking them away in his psyche. And then they make their promise to each other and he leaves. And she forgets everything.
Well, she forgets everything about Jace. She knows
all
to
right,
call...
About Jace. So
yeah.
She casts her spell.
Right.
After figuring out where she is. And then the planar bridge opens up, pulls the Immortal Sun out, and she planeswalks away. And that's the end of this story.
Yep.
Now,
yep.
Wilma, I do want to let you know, if you didn't notice this, there are still two more stories left in Rivals.
Right. And we have
So what's
going to
end up happening?
We have quite a few characters that have been, you know, richly developed over the, you know, time here on Ixalan. And, you know, their actions are definitely going to have to be cataloged and represented in the story moving forward. I mean, when we last left our group of hungry, hungry hippos on top of the Immortal Sun, as you so eloquently put it, we had Whatley, Angrath, Tishana, and Vona all touching the Immortal Sun, basically in the room above where this whole interaction between Azor, Jace, and Vraska took place. And one of the last things you see or hear or read, rather, is when Angrath starts to sink into the Immortal Sun. Now,
No, he's sinking into the gold floor around the Immortal Sun.
Into the gold floor around the Immortal Sun, sure. But when you look at the art for the card Mastermind's Acquisition, you see that the Immortal Sun is being pulled through the planar gate or planar bridge, and we have four people standing on top of the Immortal Sun. So, I mean, this breeds quite a bit of speculation in terms of what's going to happen between now and next week when we hear the next story, and I'm sure we'll hear about what's happening to all of them, but, I mean, this is crazy. This planar bridge is opening a portal to wherever the Immortal Sun is going to go. You think
right.
It's Kaladesh? I believe.
You know, I could see Kaladesh and then being put to another plane easily. I mean, one of the speculative thoughts right now is that he can easily, what he's going to do is, I mean, we already saw that.
Well, I guess the planar bridge
can't. Samut. having a hard time facing off against the Eternals of Amon-Ket.
Right.
So what a lot of people are looking at is that they probably pulled it to Kaladesh, and what they're going to end up doing with it is they'll pick it up whenever they need to and shoot it off to another plane where they're going to invade with the Immortals.
Wait. Shoot what off?
Any planeswalker. Huh?
Shoot what off to a different plane?
The Immortal Sun.
Oh, okay,
so
gotcha.
Planeswalkers can't walk away while the Eternals ravage it and kill everything in sight because they're undead immortal beings almost.
Exactly. And here's a point that was brought up in the story that definitely bears, you know, talking about is the fact that since these immortals have been encased in Lazatep, that allows them passage through the blind eternities without getting eradicated. So if these people who have been standing on top of the Immortal Sun somehow get sucked through the Planar Bridge's gateway, they could be eradicated if they're not planeswalkers. I mean, Huatli's a planeswalker, Angrath is a planeswalker, Tishana is not a planeswalker, Vona is not a planeswalker, at least that we know about, and, you know, they could just get disintegrated immediately. But if this Immortal Sun is going to Kaladesh, you could have Huatli and Angrath just all of a sudden just bloop, you're in Kaladesh. And for Huatli, that actually holds a little bit of weight because she saw Kaladesh when she tried to planeswalk away earlier and got sucked back in due to Ixalan's binding. And Angrath, I think if he finds out that he's able to planeswalk away, he's just going to be like, peace, I'm gone, I'm going back to Khaldeen. And, you know, they might have to go and actually pursue him if he's going to be a part of the story at all moving forward. But
Yeah,
it's that's very interesting because the Planar Bridge can't move, right? The Planar Bridge is on Kaladesh. You can't actually say, hey, I'm Nicol Bolas, I'm going to grab this Planar Bridge under my arm and we're going to go over to Dominaria or something like that. Like that, if you're a planeswalker, you kind of have to planeswalk yourself, right? I mean,
sure.
I mean,
but what's the problem of being able to use the Planar Bridge to go from Amon-Ket to Kaladesh, from Kaladesh to Dominaria? There's nothing that's going to stop that.
Well, there is going to be a problem of Kaladesh getting eradicated by an army of Eternals, and Chandra is going to have a bit of a problem staying still while her plane, where her mom lives, is getting eradicated.
What if they aren't using it to eradicate it, and it's a base of operation?
I guess you could find...
They may kill off all the humans and turn them into that stuff if they can find Lazatep on Kaladesh, but if they don't find Lazatep, it's not going to do much.
Yeah, I guess that's true. And I guess Kaladesh is a whole plane, so you don't have to actually put it in the city that the whole story took place in. But,
correct. You
know,
well,
whatever.
It is in that city. But they could also put it on, like, Sky Sovereign. I don't see any reason why they can't design something or figure out how the Planar Bridge works to create another ship, kind of, or not unlike the Skyship Weatherlight.
Oh, wow. So the Sky Sovereign Part 2, Version 2, could be a Skyship Weatherlight with a Planar Bridge that's just hovering above everything, and meanwhile, armies are transported in and out of planes, unbeknownst to the beings of Kaladesh on the surface. Wow.
I mean, yeah.
I guess.
Right? Anyhow, sure. Enough speculation.
Yeah. Okay.
We're all excited. We've got a couple more weeks left of this, and it will be just great.
Yes.
But as we continue on...
We have a couple of things to talk about in our news and announcements section, so why don't we bounce on over to As Foretold.
Only if I could cast Ancestral Vision.
Dude, you've already cast Living End. You cast Ancestral Vision. Let me cast my Wheel of Fate already, please.
Why not a Hypergenesis?
Well, because that's illegal in Modern. That's banned. So.
Okay, but we're not talking about only in Modern. We can play that in Legacy.
Play As Foretold in Legacy. We'll see how that goes.
Yeah, I think Show and Tell's stronger.
Okay. All right. Well.
Anyhow.
So for those of you who were fortunate enough to watch, there was a stream that went up. The Magic Channel put on a stream where they were showcasing Magic Arena, the use of wild cards, and the access to the vault. So This was very interesting. What happened was, through completing the daily challenges, I forget what the guy's name was, but he earned himself access to the vault. I'm sorry. Before that, he built a deck, a blue-white skies deck, where he needed a few cards, and he showed how you can use the wild cards to obtain any card in the set, in standard, really, that is of that rarity. So he needed an uncommon, cashed in an uncommon, got himself a Ravenous Chupacabra or something like that. So that was pretty cool. But then once he actually got himself access to the vault, what you get when you open the vault, you get a bunch of wild cards. You get 4 common wild cards, 2 uncommon wild cards, a rare wild card, and a mythic wild card. So this then, you know, brings up a couple new questions. You know, how effective is the vault system going to be? And of course, this is still in development, but this current vault system that we see, how effective is this going to be in your deck building process? You know, if every time you get into the vault, you get a mythic, a rare, 2 uncommons and 4 commons, and you get to essentially, I'm going to just use the term dust, cards that are over 4, you're going to get those commons over 4 really, really quickly. So if you get your common wild cards and you don't even need commons anymore, you just cash them in and you immediately dust them to give you more progress towards opening the vault again, that just brings you closer to opening up more mythics, more rares, and more uncommons that you actually might need. So how do you feel about this as a system moving forward?
I don't know. Like, it seems good, the ability to get them. It's just you're never guaranteed. I mean, it's still random. And
well, the vault itself isn't necessarily random because you do play, you complete your dailies, you dust cards, and you gain access to the vault more frequently as you play more and you do more of this stuff. So the inevitable, meaning if you want those 4 mythics and every time you open the vault you get a mythic wild card, the potential to build your deck all of a sudden becomes very possible.
Yeah.
So, I mean, going back to your comment about is this going to be a competitive platform, you know, will you be able to build your competitive decks? It seems to me if they actually incorporate this method and if you can get into the vault pretty frequently, then you should be able to build at least one competitive deck, relatively, I'm going to go ahead and say relatively easily.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. It'll make it easier. It'll make it more so that the competitive players can build their standard decks, their modern, their legacy, if we ever get to that.
Whoa. We dream big here on the Win Condition, but if MTG Arena is dreaming big, you know, that's a whole different story.
I mean, Commander too, right?
Yeah, that's true. Oh my gosh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's a whole mess of Commander players that are looking at MTG Arena going, maybe not, unless it's actually able to play Commander, you know? And I mean, they have specific product for Commander. Why would Wizards want to produce a digital product that doesn't allow Commander players to play? Right?
Yeah.
So there's plenty of work to be done. It's still in development. Very exciting, though, but definitely fun to keep up on these streams that they have for MTG Arena and see what's in store for the future.
What else is there that's new coming out?
Well, I think there's... Oh, guess what? Another Masters set. Hey, it's Masters 25! Get excited! Whoop, whoop! So
yeah, I'm not that excited. Sorry.
So we do know that Jace the Mind Sculptor is going to be in Masters 25. That's pretty exciting.
Yes, we do.
Yep.
That is pretty exciting. What else do we know? Azusa.
Yes. Is that her first reprint?
No, she's got a Judge reprint.
Oh. Okay. All right.
Fine. Don't count that. Whatever.
Okay.
Also, I'm pretty sure she has an Eternal Masters or something like that reprint, too. Maybe Modern Masters. I think she's got more than one. And then we've got some other metal construct dude that we don't know what it is.
Okay.
But well, one of the interesting things on this is that any of the old cards that we see that aren't what looks like a Planeswalker are going to have a watermark on them from their original set.
What does that mean, Greg?
I mean, it's cool, right?
Oh, it's very cool. I mean, watermarks are awesome. If only there were a card that, you know, was, you know, referenced watermarks. We don't have one, something
I don't
like
know.
That, do
is there, like, Watermark It?
Oh, boy.
Which, you know, adds double colorless for any card that has watermark on it.
Yes.
It seems pretty good. And, of course, after that, it's just all sorts of speculation. Now, this is going to have cards all the way back to Alpha. So,
right.
Probably going to have Soul Ring.
Sure. I mean, we had Eternal Masters. You know, we saw quite a few cards from, you know, the very, very early sets included in Eternal Masters, not just bound by the modern game of Modern Masters.
Right.
So, Iconic Masters, there's really no holds barred. Wait, the reserved list. So, nothing on the reserved list, obviously, is going to get reprinted. But you can get cards from as far back as, like you said, Alpha. I mean, are there any cards that are iconic from Legends or Arabian Nights or Antiquities that are not on the reserved list?
I mean, Mountain.
True. I mean,
there definitely are some that can be printed. I mean, Lord of the Pit, things like that.
Sure.
Not
Royal
very
Assassin.
Many of the Legends, though. Yeah.
I bet we'll see Giant a Royal Rays. Assassin in here. So,
yeah. There's a lot of good cards. A lot of people, I don't know.
Do you think that we'll be seeing any
excited.
Cards? Do you think we'll be seeing any cards that have been banned?
Probably.
I mean, I'm just curious. Like, is Talarian Academy
Pod?
On the reserved list?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
But Birthing Pod isn't.
Birthing Pod is not. Very true.
No.
But it is quite iconic, I must say.
Yeah.
So. But anyway, all right, well, Masters 25 will be... Is that coming out before Dominaria?
No.
Okay, so we have some time. We definitely have some time for Masters 25 to sort of marinate, but we do know that JTMS and Azusa will be in there, so whew, that's power. You know, that's already a powerful set, and those might not be the most iconic / expensive cards in the set even. I mean, we'll see. We will definitely see.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? I am, I stand corrected. Masters 25 is going to be before Dominaria.
You know, I had a feeling, because Dominaria is coming out when? When's your birthday again?
April 27th. This will be out in March, end of March, March 16th.
Yeah, I mean, we're in February here, and Wizards does not let... you know, 2 or 3 or 4 months go by without introducing a new product. I mean, come on. I mean, Hasbro's got to make their money. So you know.
They're going to start preview season is going to be February 26th.
February 26th. Just a couple weeks away before we really start to dive into preview season for Masters 25. So, Greg,
I'm not excited about this. I'm sorry.
Well, check this out. It's March that this is going to be released in. Okay, that's 3 months into the year. We get our first Masters set. We're off the years for Modern Masters, so we're not going to get a Modern Masters set. Maybe we get Eternal Masters Part 2, you know?
Please
and
don't.
No, like, we will.
The market's already so saturated. Well, so many of these cards are not even hard to get anymore.
Well, Greg, look at this. You've got Modern, which is, many people say, the most popular format right now for constructed play. And you've got to get cards in the hands of people who don't have these if they want to play in Magic's most popular format. And the only way that you can do that is by releasing Master Sets, unless you want to release another Conspiracy set, or unless you want to stuff them into your Commander product. So I think that these 2 and 3 even Master sets a year is here to stay. I think that by releasing
you
one
ask
in March,
me, it's just way too many of them. I say one a year is good. Like, more than that, it makes it so that people don't have money to go buy this, and aren't interested in buying it.
Well, sure.
So
for
it
the...
really hurts the brick and mortar stores more than it supports their Channel Fireball event staff.
Well, I'm sure that there are people who are not able to collect every card as they come out. I mean, there's plenty of those. I myself have not bought a single pack of Iconic Masters since its release. But I know that there are people out there who do that. And, you know, for the people who will buy everything, you know, Wizards will make money. It's just a question of the print run, you know? And it's this whole, you know, when Unstable came out, they were like, how successful is it? Guess what? It's super successful. And everyone's like, yeah. Oh, get all your Unstable now because all these prices are super high. It's going to be valuable. And then Wizards goes, wait, it's successful? Okay, we'll release another, you know, a release wave of it. And then everyone's like, oh my God, never mind. Don't speculate on all this stuff. So it's really just what makes the money. So if they release three master sets a year, and let's say one of the master sets isn't as popular, they'll be like, okay, all right, one print run. That's all we need. That's fine. And then if, you know, one of them's more successful, they'll be like, guess what? You're going to get your Eternal Masters 2, you know, three print runs down the line. But, you know, I don't know. I just feel like there is so much potential for Wizards to print these master sets ad nauseum. And it may be a bad thing, especially for speculators, but it's a good thing for people who actually want to get cards to play competitively in Eternal formats, like Modern or Legacy, what have you.
Yeah, but it just, it's making it so that our local storefronts continue to have to buy into large amounts of this stock and dominates their vested interests, and they're unable to branch out to other things. I mean,
yep.
These brick and mortar stores are having to buy cases of these, and then they get, let's say they buy 10 cases, two get sold, and then two get open for drafts, and then the rest of it may or may not get sold and just sits there for months on end. That's a lot of money sitting around not being bought.
Well,
so it's hurting some of these stores.
That's the scary part, is like I know this may come against some differing opinion, but I honestly feel like Wizards and Hasbro don't care about local game stores.
Which is really awkward, because when Hasbro bought up Wizards of the Coast, their total interest was into the brick and mortar storefronts, because they understood that's where the majority of their games are being played.
That is where the majority of their games are being played. But when you talk about sales and where a majority of the product is being bought, don't you want to funnel product towards that so you can make more money? Because isn't that what this is about for Hasbro?
Which is your big box stores.
Exactly.
Not your big box stores. Sorry, your brick and mortars.
Barbie for Mattel doesn't have a local dress store where you get together and you dress up your Barbies, you know? Nerf doesn't have local war zones.
But these are completely different. Like,
no,
formats.
I get that. It's a completely different animal. You are right. But when you lump them into the same conglomerate as these other toys, that's how these companies know how to make money. And to Hasbro, Wizards is a money maker. And how do they make more money? They do this. And once Wizards can't make them that much more money, then they put their focus somewhere else. But right now, Wizards is making them a boatload of money. So yep. Why slow down? You know, and it's not something that I really, you know, agree with. I think that local game stores are a cornerstone of this game, obviously. But, you know, Hasbro doesn't see that. So what's really going to happen? We don't know. We just kind of have to wait and find out. But
yeah.
I'm standing by my statement that these three master sets a year will continue until either
We've been getting two. I doubt we're going to get more than two.
Okay, well, last year
last year was a special year.
True, true. But this year's a special year again because of 25.
Seven sets this year. We got seven draftable sets this year. Because we have the return to the core.
Yep. So... anyway, this flood of product that people were complaining about this last year, we're going to get a repeat of that this year. I'm almost 100% sure. So
I see it. It's just I feel like it's hurting the brick and mortars way too much. And sure,
oh, you're correct. You're absolutely correct.
There's going to be some influx, but we're going to see that some of these prices are going to get ridiculous because some of these brick and mortar stores are going to be able to buy boxes at below cost to the distributor.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. No, absolutely correct. Okay.
And like we've already seen in pricing with Rivals, there's three cards that are over $10, and that's
right.
It.
Right. I know we talked last episode about some prices of cards ballooning out of control, but it really is, yeah, only focused in like two, maybe three cards. But anyway, yeah, let's move on. We have one other bit of news and announcements to talk about, and that is, it is Friday, February 2nd. We are one day into Pro Tour Rivals of Ixalan. Guess what, everybody? It's a modern Pro Tour. The world is ending. The format's going to be broken. Nobody's going to want to play modern because one deck is going to surge to the top, just like Eldrazi Winter. Oh, wait, what? That's not happening? It's actually like a diverse format? Wait, what?
Not completely.
I mean, it is. It's pretty saturated with humans decks. That is definitely the dominant deck here at day one in terms of constructed. But I just tell you, watching the coverage, you saw Affinity, you saw Grixis Shadow, you saw Jund Shadow, Traverse Shadow, I'm sorry. You saw Kart Clan Ironworks combo. You saw there was a definite, you know, broad array of decks that were being played. Now, of course, this is day one, so we'll see what persists moving forward in days two and three, but I don't know. I mean, call me crazy, but I think a modern Pro Tour here is doing some pretty good things.
Yeah, it's pretty open.
I mean, it's not necessarily showcasing a lot of cards from Rivals of Ixalan. There was a couple Direfleet Daredevils that I saw in some humans decks, which is pretty exciting. But
Yeah.
In fact, there was there was a match that I saw in round 8. We had Lucas Esper Berthode against John Stern. Lucas on 5-color humans playing against John Stern on burn. Both decks were basically on one land the entire game. But what was really interesting was the fact that the humans decks running Aether Vials were just far and away ahead, like just totally. He ended up winning the match in two games. Now, granted, John had him down to 6 life through all of his burn that he could cast for 1 mana, but the fact that Lucas was able to, with his Aether Vials, drop down Mantis Riders, Direfleet Daredevils, you know, other humans of the like, Noble Hierarchs, this deck was just able to go nuts. And I think that a lot of people in testing realize that the humans decks are incredibly powerful and versatile, which is probably why we saw so many humans decks at Pro Tour Rivals of Ixalan.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go ahead.
I give you that. Humans does a lot of what you want it to do, and it does. It makes it pretty challenging for you to cope and deal with.
Right. Yeah, and a lot of these, or not a lot, but some of these decks were even scratching the Aether Vials in place of Collected Company. Just trying to get real, real aggressive. Now, in a case like this where I just described one land hands, Aether Vials definitely a lot more powerful. So you'd have to get a much better draw to take advantage of the Collected Company. I mean, you are running Noble Hierarchs, which are pretty good, but it's just interesting to see that there are now multiple takes on this human deck, whereas up until now, it's all been the same exact cookie-cutter list with a couple alterations in the sideboard.
Right. I think we talked about this last year when the humans deck made the jump, is that we noticed that they weren't running the Collected Companies, and we were kind of talking about the fact that there's going to be a high chance that we're going to get some variance here.
Right.
And we have.
Yep.
It is exactly as we thought it was going to happen, and well, I think it's good for this kind of deck, but I still don't see a huge amount of variance.
Right. No.
I want to see some crazy stuff, but I think for that they need to unban some cards. I think Bloodbraid Elf can return.
Mm-hmm.
But we still have a new ban and restricted to come out here soon anyways.
Right. Oh, and speaking about unbanning Blood Raid Elf, I also have been watching the Star City Games stream, and they've been talking about, they have a convention coming up, SCGCon.
Don't tell me they're talking about no ban list modern.
No ban list modern. I mean, somebody's doing it, and I applaud them.
All right, I kind of know the person that got in on the ground floor with this.
Really? Oh, do tell, yeah.
So I've got a buddy that you guys may know if you go to pretty much any event. You could usually find him at the MTG Deals booth. Goes by the name of Paul Fueto. And he started playing this no ban list modern a couple years back because he's like, I want to play Busted Things, but I don't want to play EDH, so let's just play no ban list. And there's a couple people that were doing no ban list Legacy and Vintage, or Legacy, which is ridiculous.
That's pretty
and expensive.
Nuts.
So they tried to stay to no ban list modern. But it's crazy. It is a lot of fun to play. I doubt we would ever see it get into a more legalized version, but
sure.
Yeah.
Wouldn't no ban list Legacy essentially be Vintage?
Yes, yeah.
Okay. Except you could play four Black Lotuses?
Yeah.
That seems so crazy. But no, I think that it would be great for everyone to at least see some no ban list modern action, because everyone's like, oh, this is too strong, this is too strong, this is too strong. Well, guess what? If you throw all the too strong things out there, what rises to the surface? And is that deck going to seal everyone else out? And
from what I've seen and heard, it's Infect.
It's Infect? Okay.
Yeah, because Blighted Agent out, and then you're like Burnishing Shoal, Emrakul, take 16 Infect.
Sure. Okay. All right. Well, we'll see. We'll see how that pans out at SCGCon when that comes out. All right. Well, we've got a couple minutes left here, and I wanted to turn the page. Let's take a quick dive into the main phase. So here in the main phase, I wanted to talk a little bit about this Admiral Beckett Brass EDH deck that I put together for our game that we played this last weekend. You can check out the deck tech on our YouTube page if you want to get everything, you know, card for card. But as a whole, Admiral Beckett Brass's ability states all pirates get +1/+1, and any opponent that was dealt damage by three pirates this turn, you gain
three or more
pirates this turn, you gain control of target non-land permanent that player controls. So that's enchantments, that's planeswalkers, that's artifacts, that's pretty much anything that's non-land. So, and that goes to say, if you were to play a four-player game and other people were somehow playing pirates, let's say you have two Admiral Beckett Brass players on the table, and both of you had the Admiral out. If one player attacks a non-pirate player or whatever with three pirates and they get through, both people will be able to take a permanent from that player. So it's extremely strong. So this deck focuses a lot on cheap, evasive pirates. The Marauderer, the Kite Sail Marauderer, whatever that one is from Rivals of Ixalan.
War Kite Marauderer. Makes 0/1s when it attacks. Yeah.
Thank you. Yes. Not only is that a flyer that will get in and do damage, but it will reduce their best creature to a 0/1. So you can either pluck it off with a one damage, or just, you know, negate it from trying to block it all. Other things like Daring Saboteur that you can give unblockability to, Siren Stormcaller, which is a 1/1 flyer for 1 mana that you can sacrifice to counter stuff. It gets really, really ridiculous when you're allowed to get a board full of creatures that can get through and you can start stealing stuff. I know that if you were to have, just for example, when we were playing, spoiler alert, when you were playing your Gishath deck, you dropped that enchantment that gives all your creatures hexproof and you can regenerate them.
Asceticism.
Let's say you're having a problem getting through a board clunked up with asceticism, but you can somehow make a creature unblockable or fly over. You can steal that asceticism and then just start going to work. So anyway, I don't want to do too much on this because I definitely want you guys to check out the video, both of the deck tech, and we'll be uploading the gameplay pretty soon here. But yeah, no, it's a very fun deck, and it's block constructed. I don't think I mentioned that too. It's all cards from Ixalan and Rivals of Ixalan, save a few mana rocks. And since it is Grixis, I did have to expand on the mana base a little bit. But for the creatures and all that stuff, it is all just straight up Ixalan, Rivals of Ixalan. It's a very fun deck. It's a very affordable deck. Very easy for you to get your hands on. So yeah, check it out if you're into that kind of stuff.
And then in the coming months, we are going to do some more deck techs with that, where we're going to theme it into being a more piratey deck.
Oh, yes. Yeah, because if you want to keep with the flavor but jump outside the realm of Ixalan, that deck can actually become a lot more powerful.
And a lot more fun at that.
And a lot more fun, indeed. So, all right. Well, that's cool.
Where can they find you?
Well, I know they can find Admiral Beckett Brass and all her pirate friends at Flipside Gaming, or at flipsidegaming.com, where you can order your singles, you can order your entire Admiral Beckett Brass EDH pirate deck, and I'm sure that order is going to be over $10, so you might as well use the promo code WINCONDITION in all caps and save yourself 10% off your purchase and help us get closer to better giveaways for you all, like the one we're going to do on episode 50, so stay tuned.
Mm-hmm.
But, Greg, to answer your question, you can find me at MTG_Sean on Twitter.
Well, yeah, that's a great place to find you. And then you can find me on Twitter at NoobSlasher2003. Don't we have an Instagram or something, too?
Oh, we do. You can get a hold of the show on Twitter at The Win Condition. You can get a hold of our Instagram at The Win Condition MTG on Instagram. I actually recently was able to make a couple trades through meeting people on Instagram.
I saw that. You got a foil Twilight Prophet?
I got a promo foil Twilight Prophet. For a bunch of dinos. Yep, someone was trying to build their Gishath EDH deck, and I had a bunch of extra cards, so I was like, why not? I love the Prophet. I actually want more of the Prophets to build my standard deck that I'm working on, but yeah.
Anyhow, enough of that.
Yep, and you can check out our YouTube page. We'll put a link in the show notes, or you can search us up. Anyhow, all that being said, Greg, thanks again.
Of course, no problem, man. It's always a pleasure talking magic with you.
Indeed, indeed. And we will talk to y'all next week.
Yep. All right, guys, have a good night.